My sermon this morning is called Lessons from Lot. Don't think I've really heard too many sermons about Lot, so we're going to try and knock one out here and see what we can do with this. I put down as a subtitle The Righteousness of Lot, because in Deuteronomy chapter 2, Mark had talked about that in class. Lot was mentioned as the Israelites were supposed to march around and not destroy some of these folks. So it's really been curious to me about Lot since Mark said that. So thank you, Mark, for giving me a subject, and I hope that's not what you preached about last week. I haven't heard your sermon from last week. I put down a subtitle to a subtitle for Lot, and I called that The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. If anybody remembers Clint Eastwood. Dominic, do you know who Clint Eastwood is? No, he does not. You really need to know your audience. So hopefully everyone else kind of has an idea who Clint Eastwood is. But he did have a movie out, The Good, the Bad, the Ugly. But when you talk about Lot's life, there's some good there, there's some bad, and there is some really pretty ugly. So anyway, I also thought that there is a lot to learn about Lot. You know, I had about 20 slides going on. I was like, boy, we're either going to have to go to lunch and come back and I'll do the back half, or I'm going to have to knock out some slides. So I did knock out a few slides. So hopefully we can get this done on time. But if you take Lot, if you just had to study Lot, and I'm just going to throw this out here, you could almost figure out everything you needed to know by Lot. I'm not saying to do that, but I'm just saying that from the beginning to the end with Lot, there's a lot of stuff going on and a lot of things that we really can learn, so let's get into it. I do want to read 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 8 one more time. Harrison, thank you again for reading that this morning. There's a lot of things in here that we need to look at, and especially the part about where Lot is righteous, because in my mind, I really don't think of Lot as, that's not the number one person that comes up in my mind when you talk about someone that's righteous in the Bible, but we do have this spelled out for us in 2 Peter. And it says, "For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to chains of gloomy darkness to be kept under the judgment, if he did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, a herald of righteousness, with seven others, when he brought a flood upon the world of the ungodly, if by turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah to ashes, he condemned them to extinction, making them an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly." Let's remember that portion. "And if he rescued righteous Lot," there it is, right there, righteous Lot, "greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked, for as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over their lawless deeds that he saw and heard." So the two things I want you to focus on that is making an example of what is going to happen to the ungodly. And we also can point out that we notice that Lot is righteous. Again, for me, it's hard to think of Lot as being righteous. It just, you know, when Mark said that, it just kind of queued up some questions into my mind, is like, how is Lot righteous? Because really, he's overshadowed by Abraham, if you think about it. In Hebrews 11, so in the faith chapter, Hebrews 11, 8 through 10, talks about Abraham. By faith, Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. By faith, he went to live in the land of promise, as in a foreign land, living in tents with Isaac and Jacob, heirs with him of the same promise. For he was looking forward to the city that is foundations, whose designer and builder is God. And then also in chapter 11 of Hebrews, we'll stay there and go to verse 17. Again, it says, "By faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises when the act of offering up his only son." So Lot place in the Bible is right along Abraham, but if we look at Abraham's life, it does overshadow what Lot's life was like. And then back in that, we still have Noah. And then so if you go back and just glance at 2 Peter, it also talks about Noah, and Lot similarly has a story like Noah's, but it's not nearly as exciting as Noah's, and we don't talk about Lot in the kids' classes with floods and the animals and all these things like that. So Noah, I would say, also overshadows Lot. And we see that in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7. And it says, by faith Noah, being warned by God concerning events as yet unseen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. By this he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness that comes by faith. But we can see that Lot and Noah together do have some things in common, that they are able to be saved in a wicked world. And you can see that in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, 9 through 10. If we can look at 1 Corinthians chapter 5, verses 9 through 10. It says, I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the sexually immoral of this world, or the greedy and swindlers or idolaters. Since then you would need to go out of the world. We're going to be in the world, and we're going to be surrounded by things that are not what I would call righteous. That's a point there that we need to put down, but we can still be righteous. Lot, I would say, also is overshadowed by his own wife. When we think about Lot, man, you really go right to a pillar of salt. His wife looked back. In Luke chapter 17 and verses 31 and 32, I will show you why Lot's wife seems to be more important than Lot. In verse 31, it says, on that day, let the one who is on the housetop with his goods in the house not come down to take them away, and likewise let the one who is in the field not turn back. Verse 32, which I thought maybe Dominic, I'd have him read today if he wanted to come up and read. He did not, which is okay. It says, remember Lot's wife. It doesn't say remember Lot, but he says remember Lot's wife. So the question is, why do we need to remember Lot's wife? Let's turn to Luke chapter 9, and let's look at verse 62. Luke chapter 9 and verse 62 says, Jesus said to him, no one who puts his hand to the plow and looks back is fit for the kingdom of God. We're not going to be able to have it both ways. We cannot have one foot doing one thing and one foot going to church and being righteous. Saturday night, we can't go out and do all these wild things, and Sunday morning, clear up our eyes and come here and try to be righteous. It's just not going to work that way. And you'll see that even with Lot. In Revelation chapter 3 and verse 16, to drive that point home, it says, so because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. We again need to focus so much on being righteous and work on those things. But still, when I think about Lot, let's turn to Genesis chapter 13 and verses 8 through 13. It seems like Lot in these verses is doing a lot to take care of Lot. And you can almost look at him and say, you know, I kind of think this guy was sort of greedy right here. And I'm going to read Genesis chapter 13 and verses 8 through 13. And I want to see if you guys can see the same things that I was looking at. And it said, and Abram said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, and between my herdmen and thy herdmen, because they were not getting along. For we be brethren. I want you to make a note of that right there. For we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. And Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere. Before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest into Zoar. Then Lot shows him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent towards Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked, and I want you also to remember this point as well, which I think you know. But the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord, and I'm going to add that word, which is at the end of this verse, exceedingly. So So I want to go back and just touch on the word, for we be brethren. Because this is a good lesson for us. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verses 10 through 13, it talks about us and how we are supposed to act with our brethren. We must not be divided. In verse 10 it says, "Now I beseech ye, brethren, by the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it hath been declared unto me of you, my brethren, by them which are of the house of Chloe, that there are contentions among you." The point being made here is that we need our brethren. We need our encouragement of one another. Lot really did need Abraham, if you think about that, really deep. In 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verses 20 through 21, I'll show you why. It says, "But now are they many members, yet but one body." There's many members, but one body. "And the eye cannot say unto the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you." Literally, I've probably lived that here the last month or two. In losing my uncle, I mean, we lost him as far as his life, but we actually lost him. And so, I don't know if anyone else has actually lost someone who is a family member. I mean, literally lost them. They have no idea where this person is. And what that kind of does to you. And the wonderment and things like that. But the encouragement I got from everyone here and the kind words and all the things that were done about this is so helpful and so encouraging. And you think about that and you think about everyone here and that you know that everyone's going to be here when you show up, maybe late, but you show up in the morning and you're so thankful for everyone here. And we need to think about that. Especially in Lot, and he's like, and he divided up with Abraham. You think about, he really should have been thankful for how much, and maybe he was, because it doesn't say he wasn't, but being thankful that Abraham was a brother. Because really there seems like he had a momentarily kind of a lapse of this thought of, you know, I need to be a servant in my life. Because in Genesis 13 and verse 10, it talked about lifting up his eyes. So perhaps he just had at this point just a momentarily skipped a beat here and was like, I'm going to take care of myself, and forgot about wanting to be a servant with one another. But we cannot do that as well. In Philippians chapter 2, let's take a look at Philippians chapter 2 and verses 3 through 4. Philippians 2, verses 3 through 4. It talks about, "Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem other better than themselves. Look not every man on his own things, but every man also on the things of others." I just want you to think about what would have happened to Lot if he would have just said, "Abraham, you pick wherever you want to go, and I will be your servant." What kind of stories would we have had after such a thought like that? Especially if you think about, and this is one of the slides I took out, Genesis 14, after Abraham comes back and rescues Lot, you'd think at this point he would change his mind. He's like, look, I'm your servant. I'm here to serve you. Let's work together and let's work this thing out and live our lives in peace. So I want everyone to remember that, as far as brethren goes, that we live our lives in peace. And the other point I need to throw out about Lot is that Lot didn't immediately live in the city. Have you ever thought about that? How this actually worked out with Lot? And I don't think I've ever had that really tossed out too much to me, but Lot, in Genesis chapter 13 and verse 12, let's look at that. From the King James Version, and I've had this pointed out to me, it says, "Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain." And at this point it says, "and pitched his tent toward Sodom." Doesn't sound like he was in Sodom, but he pitched his tent toward Sodom. And then you move on one chapter to Genesis chapter 14 and verse 12, and it says, "And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed." So we think about what's happening with Lot then from one chapter. He's gone from the edge of the city, or looking, pitching his tent towards the city, to being in the city. And if you look at Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 through 13, it talks about if we get used to sin. So we know that Sodom and Gomorrah was wicked. It's already explained that to us. And Lot is getting closer and closer to these cities. And it seems as though he's getting used to this sin, and he gets more comfortable so he can actually live inside the city. Which makes me think about his righteousness again. How can this guy, how can he be there? How can he do that? But in Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 through 13, it says, "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God, but exhort one another daily while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin." We cannot get used to sin. And then we just don't ignore it. We just like, oh, that's normal. And we need to remember that it's not. Because Lot, he didn't come out of this really unscathed. He actually lost some of his family, or a lot of his family. He lost his wife when she turned back. And then his story that you have in Genesis 19, this is where I say, you know, here's where we have the ugly. It sounds like an R-rated movie. And I'm going to read Genesis 19, and we're going to look at verses 30 through 38. It's just amazing to me that his daughters came up with this plan. Something man-made, connived, that this was their plan rather than trusting God. But here we go. In chapter 19, and we'll start with verse 30, it says, "Now Lot went up out of Zoar and lived in the hills with his two daughters, for he was afraid to live in Zoar. So he lived in a cave with his two daughters. And the firstborn said to the younger, 'Our father is old, and there is not a man on earth to come into us after the manner of all the earth. Come, let us make our father drink wine, and we will lie with him, that we may preserve offspring for our father, from our father.' So they made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. He did not know when she lay down or when she arose. And the next day the firstborn said to the younger, 'Behold, I lay last night with my father, let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring from our father.' So they made their father drink wine that night also, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. The younger also bore a son and called his name Ben-Ammi. He is the father of the Ammonites to this day." So really, with his daughters, Lot had him. This is a mess. Lot's made him. It's a mess of this whole thing. And his daughters tried to take control of this and preserve their father. But really what they'd done was they'd made a mess. Which points us to the exact same thing that we've been talking about pretty much all year. That we are not in charge. That these schemes that we have are not necessarily going to work out. And we talk about that even in Deuteronomy. But God is in control. And God, at this point, still continued on with his plan. Even though Lot and his family, they made a huge mess of this whole thing. From the Moabites came Ruth, if you remember. And then Ruth is redeemed by Boaz, who actually has a story with Judah and Tamar, which just as R-rated as Lot's story. And eventually from those two comes King David. So the point I'm trying to make here is God can lead us through our brokenness if we let him. And even though our life may be a huge mess, if we turn and we follow God, we can recover from this, from the things that we've done. So that still doesn't answer and get this to the point where we see Lot as righteous. We can see a lot of things that he's done wrong. We can see a lot of things that got messed up. We can see how he can work towards sin and be involved in all this, or be maybe not involved, but be running around in all of this. But how do we get a clue where Lot is righteous? And that is where we go back to 2 Peter chapter 2, and let's start looking at verses 7 through 8. Let's look at that one more time. And it says, "And if he rescued righteous Lot, and Lot was greatly distressed by the sensual conduct of the wicked." Verse 8, "For as that righteous man lived among them day after day, he was tormenting his righteous soul over the lawless deeds that he saw and heard." He wasn't thrilled about being where he was at. And you think about when the visitors came that he had, the angels that he came, he had to protect them. He welcomed them. He bowed down to them. He had a meal, a large meal for those folks. And he protected them as well, and would have protected them with his life, looks like, as I listened to a little bit of the commentary and talk about that. But he was there to take care of them and protect them because they were under his roof, to the point where he would give them, given them his daughters, which sounds messy, but he was there to do that and stand strong. So we don't know people's hearts totally. We're not going to be able to put all that together, but we know that God saw Lot as righteous. So I want to take a look at James chapter 4 and verse 11 through 12. If you look at James chapter 4 and verse 11 through 12, is we're not going to be able to judge other people and know their hearts like what God does. It says, "Do not speak evil against one another, brothers. The one who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks evil against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you are not a doer of the law, but a judge. There is only one lawgiver and judge, he who is able to save and to destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor?" So another good point when you talk about and think about Lot. Who are we to start judging other people's hearts? And in 2 Peter, God tells us who is righteous at this point. So the story of Lot, with all of his faults, with all the things that went on, the good, the bad, and the ugly, it's actually pretty strong for us and positive for us that even though we may mess up and things may go wrong, we still have that hope that we can finish the race. We can make it. Lot actually, for me, as I was finishing up, Lot was very encouraging as far as my life hasn't been pretty at times. And I would like to have done some things different, but I can't. But we can always work towards that righteousness and change our lives. So if you look at Hebrews chapter 12 and verses 1 through 2, it says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God." So if we take a look at Lot and take a look at our lives, the goal is to work towards that righteousness and continue to run the race. So as we close, we actually need to figure out a way to start the race. And if anyone needs that sort of thing, it reminds me, tomorrow is the deadline. And I don't know if we have any baseball fans in here. Do we have any baseball fans at all? Maybe a few baseball fans in here, but for some reason I am a little bit of a baseball fan. I can't tell you too many of the players, but I love the trade deadline. And the trade deadline is coming up on Tuesday at 6 o'clock. You can no longer trade players. You're stuck with the team that you have. But I was watching the Cardinals, and they're not playing very well, so they have a couple guys that they know that most likely are going to be traded. And so the tears in the dugout of this guy that's no longer going to be with them, you can kind of relate that to a situation where we don't want to end our lives, where we have all these tears and we're no longer going to be with Christ. We need to take a look at how we need to join that race. And we offer that invitation every morning. And we also offer the opportunity of someone who's struggling the faith to come forward, and we'll have prayers for you as well. So that's how we start the race, and then we can finish that race strong. If there's anything that anyone needs, please come forward as we stand and sing.